This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Union organizing could become a lot harder in the near future. This week, the NLRB moved to review the legality of card check agreements, threatening the ability of unions to avoid the lengthy election certification process. Under a card check agreement, an employer automatically accepts a union if a majority of workers indicate their intent to form one. It's a popular form of organizing. Of a 500,000 people who have joined unions in the last few years, the majority joined as part of card check agreements. The NLRB is also reviewing whether or not to allow workers to push for a union decertification vote immediately rather than after the current one-year waiting period.
State-sponsored slave labor remains a big problem in Burma, according to an update from the United Nations' International Labor Organization. The military remains the primary culprit, notorious for literally working people to death on national infrastructure projects like roads and pipelines. The ILO says nowadays Burmese are more often forced to act as human mules and minesweepers for the army.
Should civilians be hired by the government to perform outsourced military operations? That question was raised again this week when the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of 9 Iraqis alleging that 2 U.S. companies, Khaki International and Titan, conspired with the U.S. government to torture prisoners. The companies received U.S. contracts to perform so-called interrogation services. The prisoners who were tortured are seeking monetary compensation and demanding the firms be denied future government contracts.
Workers at a DuPont chemical plant in Niagara finally be told about hazards on the job after an administrative law judge Tuesday ruled the company violated federal labor law when it withheld requests for plant information by the Paper Allied Industrial, Chemical, and Energy Workers Union, or PACE. Not only did DuPont keep secret information on just what chemicals are at the Niagara Falls facility and where they're stored, but it disciplined the former president of the PACE local after he went to the media with concerns about the company. As part of the judge's finding, back pay plus interest will be paid to any employee who was harassed over the union safety investigation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. There seems to be no end in sight for global military spending, according to a recent study by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Total spending topped $956 billion, an increase of 11%. The U.S. share is by far the largest, accounting for 47% of the total. Japan followed with 5%, and England, France, and China each with 4%. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Sometimes it takes the unspeakable horror of war to unveil ugly truths about national policies that our so-called leaders don't want us to notice, much less discuss. Take, for example, the horrible news coming out of Iraq about contract workers for Halliburton and other war corporations being brutally killed and their bodies barbarically desecrated. Naturally, the first reaction is shock and outrage. But then, obvious questions come to mind. Why has so much of our military been corporatized? And who are the Halliburtons getting to take these dangerous jobs? The first question reveals the ugly fact that the military itself has become a for-profit enterprise. Corporations not only provide the weaponry, but increasingly they also provide the war personnel, everyone from armed troops to essential supply squadrons. This is rationalized on the basis that a Halliburton can do it cheaper. But do they? To get people to go to Iraq, Halliburton pays $80,000 to $100,000 a year for a truck driver or mess cook, plus health care and life insurance. Not to mention the overhead and guaranteed profit that Halliburton tacks onto each of the pay stubs it submits to us taxpayers. A soldier doing comparable work is paid a fourth of that. The second question speaks volumes about America's ugly economic policies. By deliberately pushing outsourcing, union-busting, and low-wage Walmart jobs, our corporate and political leaders have created a huge pool of the working poor. These are the people who, out of necessity, will take Halliburton's paycheck, even though it means separation from family, 14-hour days, 7 days a week, and exposure to kidnapping, torture, and death. Unlike soldiers, these contract workers are poorly prepared. They get only a week of training. This is Jim Hightower saying, what we have here is an immoral system of war profiteering at the expense of taxpayers, the working poor, and America's democratic values.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, friends. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast. It's Friday, the first hour of our program. Time for Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the House of Representatives in 1991. Congressman Sanders became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years. He has since been reelected five times. He's the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Hey, it's so great to have you back. What's on your schedule for the day? Is there anything you want to talk about here?
Well, I think there are a number of things. There was an article, a very interesting article, I don't know if you saw it, that appeared in the Wall Street Journal, which is very relevant to what you and I have been talking about and many of your listeners for a number of months now. The situation is that General Motors is now telling its suppliers that if they cannot compete with the prices that they're getting from China, that they're going to have to move to China, or the GM will buy product in China.
Right.
Then you have GM and Ford are both doing it.
Yep.
And here's the president. This is the president of Ford Motor Company, Nick Scheel. And this is what he says, and I quote, "It's economics 101, Adam Smith. It's the law of comparative advantage," end of quote. He says the benchmark component prices Ford is asking suppliers to match these days represents optimal prices and can come from anywhere in the world, including China. In English, what this means is, hey, folks, are you ready to compete with people who are making 90 cents an hour, 50 cents an hour? And that's economics 101, because if you're not, hey, that's the way. That's where your job is going to go.
Yeah, you know,
these guys are so blatant and upfront about saying that is really quite incredible.
What's so ironic is that he quotes Adam Smith and David Ricardo. Adam Smith in Wealth of Nations was essentially a protectionist. I mean, he was arguing that if one country made good wine, another country made good cheese, and a third country made good wool, that they should trade with each other so everybody could have wine, cheese, and wool. But he made a point of saying that human labor is not something that should be traded. In other words, just because there's cheap labor. David Ricardo, in his theory I'm forgetting now, you just quoted comparative advantage, right. Again, went out of his way to say, and of course it's been economics right up until the beginning of the Reagan era, basically, when we got trickle-down conservative economics, that human labor is something that is exempt from this.
That's right. I mean, the idea of comparative advantage suggests that you don't grow bananas in the North Pole.
Right. Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. But it's not to say that you force American workers to see a substantial reduction in their wages because you have a situation in China where people are forced to work for pennies an hour. That's not comparative advantage. That's just exploitation of workers both here and in China.
Yeah, it's outrageous. By the way, let me let our listeners know if you have a question. I know Congressman Sanders loves to take questions, and your answers and your thoughts on the air. Our number is 1-866-889-8894. 1-866-889-8894. Yeah, in fact, the whole point of having an economy, the whole point of having a government and having rules by which we conduct economic, you know, trade, for example, from the founding of this country until Reagan came into office, basically, the notion was the first purpose of doing business is to serve society. After all, that's
right.
Us.
That's
you know?
Right. And these guys, I tell you, what is really, not that it's new, but their blatancy, their openness about saying to the American middle class, hey, forget it. Your standard of living is going to go down. China is your competition, and that's the way life goes. You know, Tom, it's a funny thing. If you follow the media, as I know you do, the president for the last couple of weeks has been talking about all of the new jobs being created and so forth and so on, and it's true, there are new jobs being created. And he doesn't quite understand why poll after poll shows that the people still have a very unfavorable view about what's going on with the economy. People are very anxious economically about the future. And the answer to that is not just unemployment, which in some parts of our country is much, much too high. It is the quality of the jobs that are being created and the fact that the new jobs that are being created pay substantially less than the jobs that we're losing in manufacturing or information technology, and that many of these new jobs have minimal or no benefits, no health care, and so forth. Yeah. So the president doesn't get it because his friends, who are the heads of CEOs, hey, the profits are way up, they're doing great. Middle class is hurting, and people understand that there's something fundamentally wrong with the direction of the economy today.
Yeah, and the people get it, but there's not a member of the cabinet who's not a multimillionaire. The president was born on third base and thought he'd hit a triple. You know,
Well, these guys are way out of touch with what's going on with people who are losing health care benefits, who are being asked to pay more and more for lower quality health care, who are worried what kind of jobs their kids are going to have, who can't afford to send their kids to college because federal aid, financial aid for college has gone down. No, this guy is way out of touch.
Yeah, and now General Motors, according to the Wall Street Journal, is officially bragging about it. I mean, this is it. This is the. Let's take some phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Humboldt County, you're on live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. Bernie, you are in so many ways much wiser and far more practical than most of us, and we hear that and we appreciate it. Still, there is a concern we have. We know now from you that it would serve no purpose at all if we could somehow impeach Bush and be stuck with Cheney, but some of the criminal conduct that goes on in this White House, it's involved shifting so much, well, taking a multi-trillion dollar surplus and turning it into a mega triple, trillions of dollars of deficit to benefit their own little select group by unlawful awarding of contracts and such.
Yes.
The complicity they had in 9/11, can they be somehow held criminally liable for what they've done?
But Dave, here's the point, and let me spend a moment on this. In my view, this moment in American history is extraordinarily pivotal. And what happens in the election in 5 months will determine, you know, what's going to happen in this country for the very, very distant future. for many, many reasons, and you've indicated some of them, what is going on is totally and absolutely outrageous. I believe very strongly, and I've said it before on this program right now, that the main focus for all of us has got to be the defeat of George Bush in November. And then we'll have an opportunity to take a real analysis of what these guys have done and possible criminal activity and so forth and so on. You are absolutely right that they are giving huge tax breaks to the rich. They're giving contracts to their campaign contributors. They're destroying the middle class. But I think in the 5 months that we have in front of us, what all of us have to do is contact our friends, register people. We have the lowest voter turnout of any country on earth. Get involved in the political process. That's what I think the mission is for today.
Well said.
I'm going to stay on that. I'm a stubborn guy, but that's where I think we have got to go.
Well, well said, and I agree with you. Is it Roy in Rio Rancho is on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roy, what's up?
Good morning. You know, this is such a sad day to lose, you know, just such an icon that made us feel so good and so enthused and just loved mankind. But enough about Ray Charles. I wanted to point out a couple. This GM thing kind of dovetailed right into what I've been thinking when I saw the story on Lou Dobbs last night. This is a national defense issue.
Yes.
As well as, and I just glanced at it, I didn't go find it, I understand that the consumer price index has been delayed because it's all screwed up. And we're playing games with these inflation numbers. The inflation is down because we're buying $6 shirts instead of $8 shirts made in America, or T-shirts or whatever. We're, you know, if they can whack $10 off a part made in China, are we going to see that $10? I doubt it. But they distort the inflation numbers, and now this is a defense issue.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're right, and interestingly enough, you know, I am not a conservative, as I'm sure the listeners know, but you're finding a number of conservatives who are beginning to catch on that when Boeing and other large corporations do an increasing amount of manufacturing and production in China, you know what they're doing? They're also transferring technology. And while the law says, you know, you can't transfer dual-use technology, technology that could be used for military purposes, obviously we know that's not the case. So there is a growing concern that as we lose our manufacturing capability, we are, in fact, suffering serious national security problems, and even worse, perhaps giving technology to people who hopefully never will be, but it someday might be military opponents.
Yeah, we've reached the point now where in order to build a missile system, we need parts from China. I mean, that just should not happen. You know,
that's right. It's interesting, even on that issue, some of the conservatives who have been great proponents of unfettered free trade are beginning to have second thoughts.
Yeah, and wisely so. 17 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman Program, Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bill in Florida is on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you all doing today?
Good.
My question is, if they're going to lower the wages of the American worker to the level of the Chinese worker, does that mean they're going to take corporate level payroll and lower that also?
Well, actually, not so, Bill. Good question. My guess is that the CEO of General Motors and Ford probably are not going to do away with their millions of dollars a year in compensation and their fancy retirement benefits and their golden handshakes and all of that stuff. That's a good question. And the answer is, I think you know, no. That's only for the American worker. That's only for the middle class. The CEOs will continue to earn somewhere around 500 times more than the average American worker. Those are the heads of large corporations.
Yeah, and the last time we saw that was the Gilded Age, from 1880 to basically the 1920s and the Great Depression.
What's going on now, Tom, is that's exactly right. The discrepancy in wealth and income has not been to this extent since the 1920s. You're exactly right, which led up to the Depression.
Yeah, yeah. There was somebody wrote a funny piece, I can't remember who it was, suggesting that we should start a movement to outsource CEOs. I mean, you can get a good CEO in India for only $500,000 a year, right?
That's right. I mean, that's an interesting point. But, what, you know, you and I, you played those outrageous. Remember those tapes you played last week?
Yeah.
With regarding the Enron guys?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is capitalism run amok, where people are concerned. These guys who make all kinds of money could care less about ordinary people, and the only thing they want is fat compensation packages for themselves. And if the middle class goes down the tubes, if America goes down the tubes, hey, no problem, not for them.
Yeah, burn, baby, burn.
That's right. Boy, that was something.
And let's give it to grandma. And but see, the reality is that, I mean, the rules of the game are such that a corporation has to place profits ahead of everything else, and that's what so many conservatives don't get, and why we should have government doing so many things, because. You know, there should. You know, what's the priority? And I'm going off on a rant here. And we got a break. So anyhow, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Those of you who are on hold, hang on. We'll get to your calls right after this. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Friday afternoon brunch with Bernie. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. It's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Some fun. You only live but once, and when you're dead, you're done. So let the good time roll.
Ray Charles, we're gonna miss you.
I don't care if you're young or old. You ought to get together and let the good time roll.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 25 minutes past the hour. Brunch with Bernie, our first hour of our Friday program. Kodak in Durham, South Carolina is on the line. Hey, Kodak, welcome to the program.
Hello. It's Durham, North Carolina.
I'm sorry.
No problem. I guess my question is, I listen to a lot of C-SPAN broadcasts, and across the nation there's been such a great outpouring of sympathy for the Reagan and their family. But the thing that just catches my attention about the whole thing is that, you know, these same people, you know, want to overlook the bad that he did at this particular time. But you cannot objectively overlook that because he was really a very bad president. And I was wondering why I've not heard anything about the connection between the Bushes and Hinckley, the person that shot Reagan. Because I remember during those years there was not an investigation, but there were some newscasts regarding Hydrogen, and I haven't heard anything about that today. And I think it's ironic that the people that suspectedly may have had something to do with the shooting of Reagan is now giving the eulogy.
Yeah, interesting, Kodak. Bernie, what are your thoughts on that? One of the members of the Bush family, and I don't remember who it might have even been. I just don't remember who was having dinner the night before Reagan was assassinated with one of the members of the Hinckley family. I think it might have been John Hinckley's father.
I read that. I don't know anything more about that, and you know, I'm not too much into conspiracy theory, but I would pick up on the point that Kodak made about, you know, a president is dead and we mourn the loss of any president. But I think an objective, and the reason, and by the way, let me say a word on this. One of the things that concerns me about what has happened this whole week is something is very interesting. What you're seeing in Washington today is a state funeral, which appropriately enough is paid for by taxpayers at, I believe, the tune of a couple of million dollars. What is lacking from that funeral today, Tom? What's lacking is the only people you're hearing eulogizing the president of the past president of the United States of all of the people are conservative Republicans.
Yeah, Bill Clinton was specifically uninvited, for example.
Not only Bill Clinton. I mean, the truth of the matter is, and somebody made this point, you know, no question, Ronald Reagan was a very conservative Republican president. But you know what? Unlike the current president, he was much less bitter and partisan in his activities. He had to work with the Democrats who then controlled the Congress. And he did.
Yeah.
And he had friends, Tip O'Neill and others. Isn't it a little bit strange that when a nation in a state-funded funeral is mourning the loss of a president, which is appropriate, that the only people who are doing the eulogizing are conservative Republicans?
Do you think that decision is being made by Nancy Reagan and the Reagan family?
Well, they say it is, but Nancy is, in all due respect, I mean, if you want to hold a private ceremony, then you invite who you want. This is a public ceremony in the Capitol, paid for by taxpayers. And obviously the wishes of the widow have got to be honored, but it's more than just that. He was the president of the United States, not just the husband.
Yeah.
And I think what would be appropriate is the entire nation mourning the president, eulogizing the president. And the fact that leaders of a political party which may today have more support than the Republicans were specifically prohibited from coming speaks to the kind of partisanship that currently exists in an administration where the president said he was a uniter, not a divider. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you can't mourn a president of all of the people by all of the people, there's something very wrong. And that bothers, I think, a lot of folks.
Yeah, in fact, it would probably even have bothered Ronald Reagan.
I think it would have.
Yeah. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program where we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, our number 1-866-889-8894. Those of you on the line, hang on. We'll be right back.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Union organizing could become a lot harder in the near future. This week, the NLRB moved to review the legality of card check agreements, threatening the ability of unions to avoid the lengthy election certification process. Under a card check agreement, an employer automatically accepts a union if a majority of workers indicate their intent to form one. It's a popular form of organizing. Of a 500,000 people who have joined unions in the last few years, the majority joined as part of card check agreements. The NLRB is also reviewing whether or not to allow workers to push for a union decertification vote immediately rather than after the current one-year waiting period.
State-sponsored slave labor remains a big problem in Burma, according to an update from the United Nations' International Labor Organization. The military remains the primary culprit, notorious for literally working people to death on national infrastructure projects like roads and pipelines. The ILO says nowadays Burmese are more often forced to act as human mules and minesweepers for the army.
Should civilians be hired by the government to perform outsourced military operations? That question was raised again this week when the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of 9 Iraqis alleging that 2 U.S. companies, Khaki International and Titan, conspired with the U.S. government to torture prisoners. The companies received U.S. contracts to perform so-called interrogation services. The prisoners who were tortured are seeking monetary compensation and demanding the firms be denied future government contracts.
Workers at a DuPont chemical plant in Niagara Falls, New York, will finally be told about hazards on the job after an administrative law judge Tuesday ruled the company violated federal labor law when it withheld requests for plant information by the Paper Allied Industrial, Chemical, and Energy Workers Union, or PACE. Not only did DuPont keep secret information on just what chemicals are at the Niagara Falls facility and where they're stored, but it disciplined the former president of the PACE local after he went to the media with concerns about the company. As part of the judge's findings, back pay plus interest will be paid to any employee who was harassed over the union safety investigation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. There seems to be no end in sight for global military spending, according to a recent study by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Total spending topped $956 billion, an increase of 11%. The U.S. share is by far the largest, accounting for 47% of the total. Japan followed with 5%, and England, France, and China each with 4%. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Down, way down up on the Swanee, talking about the
river, yeah, you know, so far, so far away,
so far,
oh yeah.
And welcome back, 27 minutes before the hour, the Tom Hartman radio program with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number, the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Claudia in Coon Rapids, Minnesota is on the line. Hey, Claudia, welcome to the program. Claudia? Maybe we've lost Claudia. Okay, so let's move along to Barbara in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Barbara, hey, what's up? We've lost Barbara, too. That's amazing. We had a call from a guy yesterday who was convinced that the CIA was, like, bugging our phones and things. And all. Who knows? Maybe he's right. You know. Well, that's the phone lines are open, folks. 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in.
Let me jump in here.
Sure.
While we're waiting for some calls. And, you know, a lot of folks call up. And, you know, they're kind of into conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. They've heard this and they heard that. And who knows? Maybe some of the stuff is true. Probably most of it is not. But, you know, to really understand what is happening in America today, you don't have to be into conspiracies. Because we understand, I mean, the facts are clear. It's all part of the public record. If you want to know about legislation that takes place in Washington, D.C., check out who makes campaign contributions. Find out the agendas of those organizations and individuals, and then watch it appear on the floor of the House of Representatives a certain time later.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
If it's tax policy, if it's health care policy, if it's prescription drug policy. So you don't need a conspiracy to know why things happen in America. It happens because some folks have incredible wealth and power. They go to fundraising dinners in Washington, D.C. for $25,000 a plate. They bring in huge amounts of money to the president's campaign coffers, and they end up getting results and getting legislation passed that they want. That's most of what goes on. Not very complicated.
Yeah, they're doing it all right out in the open. It's just
it's an interesting exercise.
Yeah,
do that.
Yeah,
find out where the money comes and see how that money gets converted into legislation.
Yep. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Barbara in Los Alamos, is back on the line. Hey, Barbara.
Hi.
Welcome back.
I was just wondering, am I the only one that thinks that this funeral has gone on about 2 days too long? I understand this funeral was planned in 1981 by President Reagan and Nancy, and I think he must have had a very big ego. Remember any president funeral going on for 7 days?
Yeah, I think Carter and Ford would have to die together while trying to save a baby was the joke I heard the other day for them to get this kind of treatment. What are your
right.
thoughts on this?
It's absurd.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
I think you know,
thanks,
Barbara makes a point, and I think it doesn't take a genius to understand. Just two realities. A president has died. He deserves to be buried with respect, regardless of his point of view. And so forth. But the other point is, I think that Barbara is applying, if anyone thinks that there aren't folks who are using this for political purposes, I think that they would be very naive. And there have been articles in the paper already pointing out as to how President Bush and the Republican leadership hope to take advantage of this, of the nostalgia regarding President Reagan, and to say that Bush is the legitimate heir to Reagan, and so forth and so on. And as I mentioned earlier, probably what upsets me the most is the fact that the president of all of the people has died. The public is paying for this funeral, hearing the eulogies from conservative Republicans.
Yeah, true. That sounds strange. 22 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's Congressman Bernie Sanders on the Tom Hartman Show. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. And Kevin in Fort Lauderdale, one of our Sirius satellite listeners.
Thank you. I just want to say that Ronald Reagan certainly was a friend of the working man. The question I have for the representative is...
Kevin, I'm assuming you mean that facetiously?
Yes, sir.
The question
I have before I lose you is there anything being done about the outrageous way the Medicare package was passed?
Yes. Again, the question is, Kevin asked about the Medicare package, the prescription drug bill. There are now, as I recall, three separate investigations going on just in terms of the passage of that bill, which took place at 5:30 in the morning after 3 hours of arm twisting and after the longest roll call in the history of the United States Congress. That's how they passed that bill. There's an investigation going on regarding alleged bribery of a member who voted no, and there was some thought that some money was talked about to get his vote.
Nick Smith from
there
Michigan.
Is an investigation going on regarding the actuary in Medicare who was told that he would be fired by the Bush administration if he told members of Congress what this bill actually cost. There was another investigation going on about the Bush administration creating a video with taxpayer money that looked like a news story, which they sent around the country to local news programming. Passage of the bill, yeah. So there are a number of investigations. Now, how far these investigations will go when the Republicans control the Congress and control the investigatory process and the Attorney General's office, that remains to be seen.
This, Bernie, it just so seems to me with the redistricting and everything else that the Republicans... this isn't how the game was played even back in the Goldwater days when Republicans were pretty outspoken. And I confess, at that time, I actually was a supporter of Barry Goldwater. It's not how the game was played. It wasn't, let's try to achieve one-party rule. It almost seems to me, and I know this may sound like an exaggeration, but it seems to me like the political philosophy here is one of Stalinism.
Well, Tom, there was a very good piece. I don't know how many of the listeners read a publication called The American Prospect, done by a fellow named Bob Kuttner, who is one of the editors there. And he wrote a piece a number of months ago called One Party State. And what he traced was just the point that you're making. Look, let's be clear. Whenever any party had a majority, they always used things to their advantage. You know, no, nothing new about that. They used... If you had the power, you use the legislative process, you try to manipulate the media and so forth and so on. Nothing new. But is the current leadership playing by a different set of rules? I think so. I mean, I just use this funeral as one example. This is a president of all of the people, and people from the political opposition are unable to eulogize. In terms of the legislative process, in terms of what happens on the floor, historically, what we have had in Congress are what they call open rules. So that means a bill comes up and members are given the opportunity to offer amendments. Never before this particular right-wing leadership have we seen such a restriction on the ability of members to offer amendments. Very centralized control.
You mean never before in 227 years of the American Republic?
Yes.
Wow.
That's to the best of my knowledge,
Not
having been around 200 years ago.
Yeah.
But from what my understanding, and certainly I can see it in Congress. There's when the Democrats controlled, and I was there for some of those years, Republicans would moan and grunt, this is not an open rule, only 3 hours of debate. And yet right now, in major bill after major bill, what happens if you have an amendment, many people don't understand this, if you have an amendment now, you can't just walk into the floor of the House and say, I have an amendment, and it's germane, you can't do that. What you have to do is go to the Rules Committee, which is controlled by the leadership, and the Rules Committee says, no, we don't want to accept this amendment. It will not get to the floor of the House. So the leadership determines the context of the debate, what amendments can be offered, and that is tighter and more restricted than it has ever been before. And then now what you're looking at in America today is the Republicans controlling the White House, the Senate, the House of Representatives, and, of course, moving very vigorously to install right-wing judges in the legal system as well. So I go on and on and on, but to answer, I wouldn't say it's cynicism per se. It's, you know, we got a long way to go to that. But is there an effort to try to, in a nation almost evenly divided, I mean, this is not like a nation where 85% of the people are Republicans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Polls have Kerry ahead today, etc. The Congress is very evenly divided. They are using their power in an extremely strong way, I think,
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Well, that's by Stalinism. I meant, you know, going to a single party state. We have two more callers, and before we get to them, I'd like to just take my prerogative here and just ask you one quick question, if I may. In the Center for American Progress Today report, they say that the Senate is now officially being run by corporate lobbyists. According to Roll Call, it's the most exclusive corporate collusion ticket in town. Once a week for the past 3 years, that's basically since George Bush came into power, a half a dozen of D.C.'s most powerful corporate lobbyists quietly meet with the Senate's top Republican aides in room 347 of the Russell Office Building to coordinate policy. Representatives from the White House often sit in on the meetings. It's definitely a hush-hush affair. The meeting has never before been publicized, and none of the Senate aides, Republican activists, and lobbyists who have attended recent sessions was willing to be quoted by name discussing it. Is this an open secret, or is this news to you?
I mean, I meant a moment ago. I mean, this is what is going on. That is who is running America.
But this is corporate lobbyists.
A moment ago about the Medicare bill. It was written by and large by the pharmaceutical industry. Not conspiracy. This is just the way it is.
Yeah, and it's a sad day for democracy. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, John in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. I'm enjoying the heck out of your show today. I just have one comment, though. I mean, I'm a big fan of Reagan. You know, I loved him when he was in office. I do think the funeral is going on a bit long. But when you keep bringing up that this is a public funeral, all I hear from liberal and Democratic pundits in the media is they're trashing him. Why would Nancy want somebody that
right,
may
but John,
say...
John, you know, there are two things. Stay on the line, John.
Okay.
It is one thing, you know, I was not a great supporter of the president, but nobody thinks for a moment that in a eulogy anybody would be anything but positive and talk about their relationship to the president. No one thinks that anybody would. You think Tom Daschle will get up there and start attacking Ronald Reagan? Of course not. It's a different thing for somebody to say, okay.
Brown.
Pardon me?
He's roasting right now. I just heard in the newspapers yesterday, Ronald Reagan is turning a crispy brown right now. Al Franken's trash. I mean, that's all I hear
But Al Franken wasn't asked. Al Franken wasn't asked to give the eulogy. No one thought that Al Franken would. What I was mentioning, John, is we have elected. You know, the Senate is almost 50-50, and we are a nation that is politically divided. We are burying a president who was a president not just for Republicans but for all Americans, and I think when you bring harmony to this country, when you bury the leader of all of the people, you don't just have one party doing that. So to answer your question, it's one thing, and you may regard it tasteless or not, you know, for people to be critical of President Reagan today. But nobody thinks for a moment that if you had a Tom Daschle of a Nancy Pelosi or Bill Clinton doing a eulogy, you think they would attack Ronald Reagan? No one thinks they would.
I don't know.
It would be respectful.
Nancy Pelosi.
No, there's
but you,
no.
But John, you don't think that anybody would get up there in a church and start attacking Ronald Reagan?
And
I would hope not, but I wouldn't think that during his funeral, Nancy Pelosi would basically say he's responsible for an AIDS genocide, I think she said. Give me a break. That's pretty ridiculous when his family's mourning to basically attribute to a genocide. I mean,
that if somebody got up there representing the Demo in a eulogy, that it would be nothing but respectful. And in fact, what is interesting about Reagan? What is interesting about Reagan is he had to. When he was president, Democrats controlled the House. He was a friend of Tip O'Neill's. They had to work together, and they did.
And well, I agree.
I'm sorry?
I agree. I wish things could be a little bit less contentious right now as well. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool conservative, but, I mean, we're all in this together.
That's right. And when a president dies, you know, I did not agree with Ronald Reagan. I did not think he was a particularly good president. But at a funeral, he's the president of all the people. He won the election, right? And we honor him, and we bury him with respect, period.
Yeah. You would think at the very least, the previous presidents who are still alive, Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Bill Clinton, would be invited to say a few words. I mean, they were his peers.
I would think so, rather than just the Prime Minister of Canada, frankly.
Yeah, it's like they're really stretching to find just conservatives who it's almost a slap in the face of we the people. rather than anyhow. John, thanks for your comments. And Bernie, you were going to say, I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, I just, I think you know, we responded. I think John makes a good point. I think today is not a day to trash Ronald Reagan, but I think that anybody who would be speaking at the funeral would be absolutely respectful.
Yeah,
there's
okay.
No doubt about that.
Claudia in Coon Rapids, Minnesota, has made it back. Hey, Claudia, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. What I'd like to ask Bernie is if he could address the issue of NAFTA has gone into effect this week.
Yes. The president won that fight. I supported the Teamsters and others in opposition to that. It is NAFTA in general has been, in my view, a disaster for American workers and, in fact, for Mexican workers. There is some concern that some of the trucks that will be on the road now are not up to snuff. They're not particularly safe. And I think for a variety of reasons, that is bad public policy. So I opposed what is, in fact, happening.
Yeah, and this happened. Thank you. And just this was an administrative thing. This, or
I don't know if it went through the court. I honestly don't remember if it was a court decision. I know that it was hotly contested by the Teamsters and the Bush administration.
Yeah. So now our air is dirtier, our unions are weaker, and conservative heads of corporations will make more money. Bottom line. Yeah. Okay. Tom Hartman here with you with Congressman Bernie Sanders. 10 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. We'll be right back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you be tried that? Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now, 800-505-1546.
Creatures in the deep ocean adapt to life in a dark and dangerous world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The middle zone of the deep ocean is a very dark place. Little sunlight penetrates to depths of 600 feet or more, and we would find it impossible to see anything down there. On the other hand, deep sea creatures are well suited for survival in this cold, dark world. Tracy Sutton is a marine scientist.
So that they can see any little available light. So they don't form a real good image, but their eyes are super, super sensitive. Their eyes are more sensitive than any instruments we have to measure light.
Sutton says good eyesight helps predators find their prey. Those other creatures have to take care not to be seen. Sutton says that's not easy because there's nothing to hide behind.
Most of these animals spend their entire lives without seeing a solid object. They don't see the bottom, they don't see the surface. They just float in this midwater zone where there's...
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
See the girl with the diamond ring. She knows how to shake that thing all right. Yeah, yeah. All right.
Ray Charles, he will be missed. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 25 minutes before the hour. Brunch with Bernie, the first hour of our Friday segment.
Yeah, yeah.
Ray Charles, he will be missed. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 25 minutes before the hour. Brunch with Bernie, the first hour of our Friday segment. Congressman Sanders, there's a Representative Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut
yes.
has tried, apparently, to introduce this thing so that Accenture and other corporations that have incorporated in Bermuda to avoid U.S. taxes won't be taking U.S. taxpayer dollars that you and I are paying out of our paychecks.
Right.
What's happening with that? What do you think is going to
be? Rosa DeLauro, by the way, is one of the outstanding members of Congress from Connecticut and a good friend. What's happening there, we will see whether that amendment will ever get on the floor of the House.
What do you think?
Apropos, I think it's a good idea. In other words, what Rosa is saying is, why are we allowing large corporations who have to make the situation less competitive for the smaller companies, obviously, and will force prices ultimately to be higher.
Yeah, and so should we be thinking? Should we be saying overtly, hey, you know, the telephone lines, even though they may be owned by Verizon or one of the other baby bells, they are part of the commons?
Yes. Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
I do appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Okay. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War, the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Union organizing could become a lot harder in the near future. This week, the NLRB moved to review the legality of card check agreements, threatening the ability of unions to avoid the lengthy election certification process. Under a card check agreement, an employer automatically accepts a union if a majority of workers indicate their intent to form one. It's a popular form of organizing. Of a 500,000 people who have joined unions in the last few years, the majority joined as part of card check agreements. The NLRB is also reviewing whether or not to allow workers to push for a union decertification vote immediately rather than after the current one-year waiting period.
State-sponsored slave labor remains a big problem in Burma, according to an update from the United Nations' International Labor Organization. The military remains the primary culprit, notorious for literally working people to death on national infrastructure projects like roads and pipelines. The ILO says nowadays Burmese are more often for human mules and minesweepers for the army.
Should civilians be hired by the government to perform outsourced military operations? That question was raised again this week when the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of 9 Iraqis alleging that 2 U.S. companies, Khaki International and Titan, conspired with the U.S. government to torture prisoners. The companies received U.S. contracts to perform so-called interrogation services. The prisoners who were tortured are seeking monetary compensation and demanding the firms be denied future government contracts.
Workers at a DuPont chemical plant in Niagara Falls, New York, will finally be told about hazards on the job after an administrative law judge Tuesday ruled the company violated federal labor law when it withheld requests for plant information by the Paper, Allied Industrial, Chemical, and Energy Workers. Not only did DuPont keep secret information on just what chemicals are at the Niagara Falls facility and where stored, but it disciplined the former president of the Pace Local after he went to the media with concerns about the company. As part of the judge's finding, back pay plus interest will be paid to any employee who was harassed over the union safety investigation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. There seems to be no end in sight for global military spending, according to a recent study by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Total spending topped $956 billion, an increase of 11%. The U.S. share is by far the largest, accounting for 47% of the total. Japan followed with 5%, and England, France, and China each with 4%. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, the thrill of this year's thoroughbred horse racing season. I'm not talking about the fact that the thrilling, strong-hearted Smarty Jones made a run at being the first horse to win the Triple Crown in 26 years. No, I'm talking about the thrilling breakthrough made by the jockeys during this Triple Crown year. A group of them filed and won a federal lawsuit that allowed them to advance the cause of horse racing by, prepare to be thrilled, wearing corporate advertising on their racing pants. Is this a great country or what? It's not as though horse racing is a virgin. Triple Crown is now branded as the Visa Triple Crown. But until now, jockeys were logo-free, and the focus of the race was, well, on the race. But, claimed the lawsuit, if the stars of NASCAR and the PGA can plaster their outfits with ads, why not jockeys? It's a First Amendment issue, they told the court. Besides, ads could be worth $30,000 apiece to them. This is Jim Hightower saying, you will be relieved to know, I'm sure, that not all standards of tastefulness have been trampled by this ruling. For one, jockey pants at the Derby cannot promote gambling, which strikes me as a bit odd, since the gamblers support the race, betting takes place right at the track, and the media openly touts the gambling odds and broadcasts the winning bets. Also, a jockey's corporate ad cannot conflict with the track's own sponsors. No Chevy logos, for example, at Ford's Derby. Again, a bit odd, since the case was said to be about free speech.
Finally, the ads cannot be, quote, inappropriate. That's a bit vague, but I guess this would rule out promos for glue or horsehide furniture.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
You think I'd maybe had some bushes phases, maybe, please? I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus on keeping you comfy. Shoe Dog.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone. Our air conditioners with Purion refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound. No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. For a limited time, save up to $1,000 on select Carrier systems. Call 1-800-CARRIER for a dealer near you. Some restrictions apply. See participating dealer for details. Carrier. Turn to the expert.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour, the second hour of our program this Friday afternoon, the 11th of June, 144 days until the election. A lot going on in the world. Thought we'd take a change of pace, as it were, and consider, and probably AM radio is the absolute antithesis of this, but nonetheless, let's consider slowness. Carl Honoré is the author of a book called In Praise of Slowness, How a Worldwide Movement is Challenging the Cult of Speed. And Carl is with us today. Carl, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you for inviting me on the show.
You're welcome. What is the cult of speed?
Well, I think that we have wound ourselves up into a state where every moment of our day is a rush against the clock, a race to some sort of finish line that we never reach. We're always seeking to do more and more with less and less time. And there's a kind of cultural assumption that faster is always better. And that clearly, at the end of the day, is a very unhealthy and unfulfilling way to live. So what my book is about is how there is a kind of worldwide groundswell against that assumption that acceleration and going more quickly and doing more and more with less and less time is always the best way to live your life.
What was the transition point? Do you see it as the beginning of the Industrial Revolution? I know, for example, churches started ringing clock towers, ringing their clocks on the hour about the same time the factory started emerging in Europe as a way of awakening people and helping define the hours to get to and from work. Is that where you think this began, or is this something that comes with television? Or, I mean, what do you attribute this to?
Certainly the main roots of our modern culture of speed and acceleration lie in the Industrial Revolution, where you see the arrival of machinery and the spread of kind of universal time. So clocks, scheduling, timekeeping, churches and factories ringing their bells to hurry people along from one task to the next. And that's certainly where it began, but it's kind of become more and more intense and more ingrained as the 19th century and then the 20th century, and now as we move into the 21st century, have moved along, and technology, for instance, has become more and more rapid, and we now expect an instant response, just as we do with email. We expect everything to be instant now, everything to be on demand, and when it's not, we get rage, you know, we get road rage, or we get office rage, or we get angry because we're just chronically impatient now.
Yeah, I find it interesting, and of course this is post-industrial revolution, but that in the 1930s, the 20s and 30s anyway, when Harry Anslinger was doing his crusade to make marijuana illegal, the primary drugs of choice were what would be called today depressants or sedatives or calm you downs, you know, basically alcohol, which was illegal for a while, pot. Even and for years, of course, in the United States had a problem with it. Nowadays, it seems that the primary drugs of choice are stimulants. We see Starbucks elevated almost to the level of cultural icon. Everybody, you know, wants their kid to be on Ritalin. We've got, you know, what accounts for that transition?
Well, I think that we've got ourselves into this condition where we're overwrought, we're overscheduled, we're overstressed, and we've kind of lost the very simple art of slowing down, of unplugging, of decelerating, of getting off the treadmill. So we also feel the pressure to keep going. So we're exhausting ourselves, but at the same time we're caught up in this notion that we have to keep on going. You know, if we put on the brake, somehow the whole world will fall apart around our ears. So what do we do to reconcile those two things? As we reach for, as you say, stimulants. So I mean, so many people can't get through the day now without a couple of gallons of coffee. And amphetamine use in the U.S. workplace is spiking now. It's going way up.
Yeah.
And of course, amphetamine is otherwise known as speed, which I think really sums up where a lot of people are.
Right, and among illegal drugs, of course, cocaine and methamphetamine, crystal meth, speed have made a huge comeback. I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, they're very popular. But perhaps these are symptoms as opposed to cause.
I think they're possibly both. I think they're very much symptoms of a burning out society that isn't prepared to accept that it's burning out. It wants to find, by whatever means, a way to carry on going at full speed ahead. And that, for more and more of us, means reaching for the medicine cabinet.
Yeah. Now, we're speaking with Carl Honoré, whose new book, In Praise of Slowness, How a Worldwide Movement is Challenging the Cult of Speed. Tell us about the movement that is challenging this.
Well, what the movement consists of, essentially, is in every walk of life, you find people right across the industrial world choosing to slow down and finding that the world doesn't end, but in fact that whatever they're slowing down in, they tend to do better and enjoy more. So if you look at people working very long hours, longer than anywhere else in the industrial world, but in Japan, workaholic Japan, and in Europe, working hours have been coming down and people are getting more work-life balance and are actually more productive per hour as a result. If you look at exercise, I mean, you think of the boom in slower forms of exercise like yoga and Pilates and Tai Chi. If you look at sex, I mean, people are turning en masse to tantric sex workshops and courses to learn the art of slower lovemaking, because sex is one thing that suffers terribly from our hurry up, get to the finish line as quickly as possible approach to life. You look at parenting, we passed on this cult of hurry and hecticness and busyness to our children, who are overscheduled now. And you're finding right across the U.S. and across the Western world, parents waking up to the fact that their kids are just burning out and that they need time off, and they're cutting back on extracurriculars. And in the U.K., where I live, just recently, the principal of a fee-paying, you know, expensive private school banned homework for kids 9 to 13. And the parents, who are all great high achievers, freaked out. I mean, it was a mutiny, and they said, you can't let our children fall behind. And the principal said, no, your children are doing enough at school. They need to slow down at the end of the day. And the parents said, no, this can't be right. And the principal said, well, it is, because in the last school, I did the same thing. I banned homework. And within a year and a half, average marks in the school went up by 20%. So wherever you look, there's evidence of people embracing this idea that slower can be better and that less can be more.
You refer to it as a movement. Do you see a coherent structure and people buying into a larger philosophy, or are all the things that you just described really little ad hoc, topic-specific discoveries, let's say, by individual people?
I think we're at the beginning of a trajectory that's leading us towards a coherent movement, but I think there's a cohesion already, and it's intriguing because the English word slow has moved out of the English-speaking countries and has been embraced across non-English-speaking Europe and Japan and so on, and people are using the word slow as kind of shorthand for this better, more balanced way of living, where you don't slow everything down to a crawl. You know, you do things quickly when it makes sense to do them quickly, but you also recognize that there is value in slowing down sometimes.
Yeah.
And people, that word slow is being attached, excuse me, more and more to different, there's an American education professor in Colorado who's talking about slow schooling and launching a movement off that. So there is it's a kind of lightning rod, and more people who are taking the step towards a kind of slower approach are using that term, slow. They're talking about a slow movement. But I think certainly if you compare it to other movements that have changed the way we live, if you think of the environmentalist movement or the feminist movement, in their early years, people maybe didn't think of themselves necessarily as feminists when they were challenging the status quo that said that women are second-class citizens. But, you know, as the movement grew, you move forward 40 years and we've made extraordinary strides towards gender equality. And even today, you'd be hard-pressed to find one single leader of the feminist movement, or you don't get a card that says, I am a feminist. I mean, these social movements, the ones that really make a difference, always tend to be informal.
And they ultimately become us. I mean, they ultimately incorporate themselves into our culture. Now, I remember 10 years ago, it seems, that slow cooking, you know, everybody wanted to buy a crock pot and toss everything in it and let it sit overnight. And slow cooking became a very popular thing, but it was a fad that went away. Do you see this as a fad that's going to go away?
No, definitely not, because I think that we have reached or are about to reach breaking point. Things have got too hectic, too fast, and too fraught. And we feel it. We see it in the rising figures of burnout, people burning out younger and younger, giving up on jobs because they just can't keep up. People alienated from their children because neither parents nor kids have time. And I think that when you go out into the streets, and as I've been doing to promote my book across North America and Europe, but you talk to people, this is an issue that touches everyone, and everyone feels in their bones that something is wrong about the way we're living now. And they are thankfully waking up to the fact that they can make a change, that they can make a change collectively and individually by slowing down often. And I don't think this is a fad. And it's interesting because when you talk about other movements such as feminism or environmentalism, people said the same thing. They said, you can't change the world. It's always been this way. And what you're proposing now is a fad. But, of course, you know, history has told us otherwise.
Yeah. We're speaking with Carl Honoré, who is a Canadian journalist based in London and a rehabilitated speedaholic who received a speeding ticket while researching this book.
Yes, I'm ashamed to say. And not only did I get a speeding ticket researching this book on the benefits of slowness, but I was actually en route to a dinner held by an organization called Slow Food. So I did write that in the book, and I did, when I was putting the book together, I thought perhaps this is just a little bit too embarrassing to mention, but then I thought, no, I will put it in because it underlines the fact that slowing down is not something that anyone does by this afternoon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about a real profound change in the way you approach time, the way you think about how you structure your life and what's important, and it's been involved, you know, structural changes in the rules of the workplace and how we think about medicine and so on. So it's a work in progress. So getting over speedaholism is a little bit, I think, like getting over alcoholism. You've always got to be aware of the social pressures, the temptations to go back to the old way. And even now, I've been at this now for 3 years. You know, I still have to keep an eye on my speed because, you know, the old reflex, the hurry reflex, is still there. And I've tamed my inner roadrunner to a great extent, but, you know, it's still there, and I've got to be aware of it.
We grew up with it. In the 30 seconds or so we've got left here, Carl Honoré, author of In Praise of Slowness, a new book. You mentioned Japan's new slow approach to schooling. Can you give us a 20-second, a quick snapshot of it here?
Well, of course, the Japanese are famous for driving their kids into an early grave, and they've now come around to the idea that the kids need to do less work. They need to spend less time at school, so they've abolished Saturday classes enough that allow children to learn at a gentler pace. And they find that they learn better, are more happy, and they actually go to school because the Japanese have a terrible endemic problem of kids playing hooky because they just can't take it.
Yeah, and one of the highest suicide rates in the world. Fascinating stuff. Carl, thank you very much for being with us today.
Many thanks.
I appreciate it. And may the slow be with you. Thanks a lot. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Ah! I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy a computer out of a catalog, but heck, you'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 888-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. Don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Woo! Well, don't you know, baby? Child, don't you know, baby? Don't you know, baby?
Ray Charles left us yesterday. But he left us a lot of beautiful music. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 25 minutes after breaking news from BorowitzReport.com, Canada refuses to change its name to Ronald Reagan. Republicans blast Canadians as Republicans in Congress to change its name to Ronald Reagan. The controversial proposal, which appeared to have broad backing from congressional Republicans, was suggested as a way for Canada to show its appreciation for the kindness and friendship that Mr. Reagan extended during his 8 years as president. But moments after the proposal was floated, Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin gave the notion of renaming his country Ronald Reagan a frosty thumbs down. Mr. Martin said in a speech to Parliament, "Canada has no intention of changing its name to Ronald Reagan, Ronald McDonald, or Ronald anything else. For one thing, it would require a total rewrite of the song O Canada." But in Congress, leading Republicans said that renaming the Canadian national anthem O Ronald Reagan was, quote, no big deal, and attributed selfish motives to Canada's refusal. As Senator James Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma, said, "After all Ronald Reagan did for them, these Canadians are acting like a bunch of ingrates. It's no wonder some of them speak French, if you catch my meaning." Mr. Inhofe said that if Canada held fast to its position, the U.S. could always ask Mexico or possibly England to change its name. But, quote, "if all else fails, there's always Iraq." Yes, the new country of Ronald Reagan, Iraq. That from BorowitzReport.com. Thanks to Andy Borowitz. Moving to a little more serious things, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld approved interrogation methods for Guantanamo detainees, according to CBS News, including stress positions, fear of dogs, physical contact. But a March 2003 draft of that memo containing a legal argument that neither Bush nor agents acting on his orders could be held liable for violating anti-torture laws in the war on terrorism is the thing that's really got a lot of people upset and concerned. Details have emerged now about deaths in custody in Afghanistan and the reported use of interrogation tactics like near drowning at Guantanamo Bay. Near drowning. A California National Guardsman says three fellow soldiers brazenly abused detainees during interrogation, sticking lit cigarettes into their ears and choking them until they collapsed. The Army's criminal division is looking into this. Human rights lawyers took the unusual step of filing a racketeering lawsuit against a U.S. civilian contractor, actually two of them, who worked at the Abu Ghraib prison near Baghdad. It alleges that employees of Titan Corporation and CACI International, Inc. conspired to execute, rape, and torture prisoners. Now get this from the indictment. To boost profits from military payments. What has happened? I mean, this. Of course, this is the dream of conservatives all over, you know, privatization. Let's turn everything over to private companies. And of course, we all know deep down inside and you know, legally, I mean, it's right there, obvious, that the first goal of a private company is always to increase profits. And it turns out that according to this lawsuit, this racketeering lawsuit, Titan Corp and CACI didn't just execute, rape, and torture prisoners because they were told to or for fun. They did it for the correct reason, the legal reason, the real reason why a corporation must exist. I mean, the Supreme Court has ruled to boost profits. This is why there are many things where it is absolutely best done by corporations, my shoes, for example. But there are also things that it's best done by government, where the first purpose isn't to make profit. The first purpose is to accomplish something. Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm
Sarah Turner. Union organizing. This week, the NLRB moved to review the legality of card check agreements, threatening the ability of unions to avoid the lengthy election certification process. Under a card check agreement, an employer automatically accepts a union if a majority of workers to form one. It's a popular organizing of a 500,000 people. Unions in the last few years, the majority joined as part of card check agreements. The NLRB is also reviewing whether or not to allow workers to push for a union decertification vote immediately rather than after the current one-year waiting period.
Slave labor remains a big problem in Burma, according to an update. National Labor Organization. The military remains the primary culprit, notorious for literally working people to death on national infrastructure projects like roads and pipelines. The ILO says nowadays Burmese are more often forced to act as human mules and minesweepers for the army.
Should civilians be hired by the government to perform outsourced military operations? That question was raised again this week when the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of 9 Iraqis alleging that 2 U.S. companies, Khaki International and Titan, conspired with the U.S. government to torture prisoners. The companies received U.S. contracts to perform so-called interrogation services. The prisoners who were tortured are seeking monetary compensation and demanding the firms be denied future government contracts.
Workers at a DuPont chemical plant in Niagara Falls, New York, will finally be told about hazards on the job after an administrative law judge Tuesday ruled the company violated federal labor law when it withheld requests for plant information by the Paper Allied Industrial, Chemical, and Energy Workers Union, or PACE. Not only did DuPont keep secret information on just what chemicals are at the Niagara Falls facility and where they're stored, but it disciplined the former president of the PACE local after he went to the media with concerns about the company. As part of the judge's findings, back pay plus interest will be paid to any employee who was harassed over the union safety investigation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. There seems to be no end in sight for global military spending, according to a recent study by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Total spending topped $956 billion, an increase of 11%. The U.S. share is by far the largest, accounting for 47% of the total. Japan followed with 5%, and England, France, and China each with 4%.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Miss you.
Well, I know a child that the sun gonna shine again.
Shine yes, indeed. 26 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. The news now out of the Independent, co.uk, the Independent newspaper in England. Rumsfeld told officers to take off gloves with Lynn. Remember this guy? This American... John Walker Lind, the American top in some building there in Afghanistan. And him and a bunch of other people came out, and they put him in a truck, and they discovered he was an American. Well, now we're getting a few more of the details, and it really, I think, gives us an insight into the mindset of this administration, which, frankly, the words frantic, paranoid, panic-stricken, hysterical come to mind. Now, some would argue that that's appropriate. I frankly think not. But in any case, here's the story from the Independent. John Walker Lynn, the so-called American Taliban, was stripped naked and tied to a stretcher during interrogation after the Office of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld ordered intelligence officers to take the gloves off when questioning him. This is in late 2001. They say the treatment of Lynn appears to have foreshadowed the abuses of Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib. He was refused a lawyer. He was not advised of his rights. Rumsfeld asked that Lynn's responses be cabled to him in Washington, D.C. every hour. This is an interesting one. Every hour. They tied him. They stripped him naked and tied him to a cot for 2 days. Can you imagine? Though Lynn initially pleaded not guilty, he later admitted reduced charges and was sentenced to 20 years. He and his lawyers, as part of this plea deal, he and his lawyers also agreed to drop claims that he had been tortured by U.S. personnel. The documents, the Independent points out, are the latest evidence to emerge revealing the efforts of the Bush administration to sidestep international laws and treaties. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Yesterday, the UK notes, Congresswoman Jane Harman of California, a senior Democrat in the House Intelligence Committee, said the views the memo contained are, quote, antithetical to American laws and values. She added, the memo argues that the president is not bound by criminal laws in the context of his role as commander-in-chief during war, that the president may be above the law. This, she said, we're quoting now from Congresswoman Jane Harman of California, this is a concept of executive authority that was discarded at Runnymede in the 13th century and has absolutely no place in our constitutional systems. Now, for those of you who don't know what she's talking about, which I suspect is most people, in England they probably, people are probably well familiar with the fact that on June 15th, 1215, King John was forced by the feudal lords to sign the Magna Carta in a place called Runnymede. And I may be mispronouncing it. I don't know. I'm not British, and I didn't learn this in England. But anyhow, if you look at the Magna Carta, and this is what Jane Harman is pointing. I mean, she's not just pointing to our Constitution. She says, let's look back at 1215. Item 39 of the Magna Carta. Let me read it to you. It's just one sentence. No free man shall be taken or imprisoned or deceased or outlawed or exiled or in any way harmed, nor will we go upon or send upon him, save by the lawful judgment of his peers or by the law of the land. 1215, June 15th, 1215. We have considered these to be the rules of civilization essentially ever since. You know, people, you know, to some extent they're right. They point to the signing of the Magna Carta as the beginning of the concept of human rights and the beginning of the early beginnings of democracy in England. Of course, democracy in England didn't really occur until 1838, it might have been 1828, with the little mini revolution they had there, where Parliament basically said to the king, okay, we're in charge now. You can be the official figurehead. And Britain became a democracy. But it's a sad day. It's a sad day, I think. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call. And number 12 in Santa Fe is on the line. Number 12, cab?
Yeah, I'm a taxi driver, and that's my driver number.
Okay. Well, hey, number 12, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, and I was watching the... I'm not driving a taxi today, and I was listening to in the radio at another station and watching on TV the state funeral today.
Yes.
And I can imagine that the ACLU is probably having fits, because people were referring to God and a building called the National Cathedral that is funded by our taxpayer dollars, and I hope they go out and file a lawsuit to have the thing basically defunded and bulldozed.
Why?
They're trying to take God and religion out of every other state symbol. I don't see why they would tolerate a National Cathedral. I don't see why they would tolerate people referring to God and a state funeral.
Why not?
I'm not just sarcastic, just so you know.
Well, I mean, the first...
I've been following the ACLU, and it seems like they have a real bent against religion in any public form whatsoever, and I don't see how they could tolerate something like a national cathedral.
Well, the ACLU has defended religion. The ACLU has no law respecting an official religion. You know, we can have a cathedral. We can have a national cathedral, certainly. We're just not going to say, oh, by the way, we're going to put the Pope in charge of it.
The only problem with that is the second clause of that. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
Right.
And that's the part that they seem to conveniently forget, because I don't really see a problem with, like, you know, having a state cathedral or a national cathedral, or having crosses or Stars of David on public property, because that is the free exercise of religion. Doesn't mention it can't be on public property, can't say that it can be funded. I think we don't need to take the Ten Commandments out of courthouses. We need to put everybody else's religion and everybody else's creed in there, along with the Ten Commandments.
Do you realize what kind of mess that would be? I mean, you're going to put the Satanists in there?
You know, I think people should be able to judge for themselves, and we shouldn't be afraid of stuff like that. I mean, people can reject the Satanists or whatever, or the Scientologists, or whatever you want to reject or accept on your own behalf. And basically, I don't think it's up to the government to say, well, you can't read this.
Oh, you can in the religion section, or go to a university and go into the religion department, but there are thousands, there are literally thousands of religions. I mean, there are hundreds of infighting sects among Christianity.
Here's the deal with that. I think the First Amendment is very important, and I'm pretty much an absolutist when it comes to the First Amendment. I don't think the Ten Commandments should be taken out of a courthouse. I think there should be a national cathedral, and you can have whatever religion you want in there. And I really...
Well, those are two separate things. Let's take them one at a time. Why do you think that the Ten Commandments should be in a courthouse?
Because I think they, for one thing, are a basis of some of our laws, and I think it is also the free exercise of religion.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with it. If someone wants to put it in there, I do not think they should be prohibited from putting it in there.
Okay, I don't have I understand your point. Of the Ten Commandments, I don't have them memorized, I'm sorry, but the first one is, you shall have no other God before me, and you got to honor me. Okay, is that part of our law?
It's part of, I think, there are a lot of people in this country that come from either Christian or Judeo-Christian background, and that is a very important part of their belief system, and I don't think that should be excluded. And just because you don't have God, you don't have to accept that part of it.
Wait a minute. If something is law, you have to accept it.
You know, you don't have to accept it.
If you break a law, you go to jail.
Well, you're breaking it. So, hold on, I'm in a bad spot here. Let me move.
Okay.
Go ahead, you're breaking up. So what was that?
Break a law, you go to jail. Why should, you know, my recollection is that of the Ten Commandments, there are only two, don't steal and don't kill, that have anything to do with law in the United States. And in fact, according to Thomas Jefferson, you go back and read Jefferson, he makes a big point about the fact that the United States was not founded on biblical law, and neither was England, because England was pagan for 200 years in the 500s and 600s before they became Christianized.
Sure.
And British common law extends back before the Christian era in England. And so, you know, if only two of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not steal, really have anything to do with any of our laws, then why should we have things in there like thou shalt, honor thy father and mother, thou shalt not covet somebody else's wife? I mean, this is religion. It's entirely appropriate to be in a church. It's entirely appropriate that, you know, people be able to be out in the streets saying it. But should somebody come to you at the point of a gun and say, I'm going to take money from you, number 12, and I'm going to use that money to put on a public place, I'm going to use that money to put up a sign that says Lucifer is the head guy.
There's plenty of stuff that we pay taxes on that we don't agree with. That's why I don't believe things like 70% and 90% tax rates are appropriate for anybody.
But you're evading my question.
No, I believe that should be all out because it's all protected in the First Amendment. I do not think it should be censored. And this era of the Patriot Act and this era of campaign finance reform, which basically is a 60-day blackout period before an election where people can't say what they think about a candidate, I don't think we need less free speech. We need more of it, including religious speech, philosophical speech, and everybody's religion and everybody's philosophy. So people can make up their own mind. Basically, there should be no reason why this stuff shouldn't be in a public place. Right here in Santa Fe, there's a place called... There's a thing called the Cross of the Martyrs. It is a giant white cross on top of a hill right downtown, and I'm sure it's public property. And I would love to see the ACLU come in here and try to sue to have that thing removed. It would be run out of town on the rail because this is a very old-school conservative Catholic community, and they're going to be like, you know, you're not going to come in here and tell us what to do from Washington, D.C. We'll put any cross anywhere we want to, on public property or private property. And if someone wants to put a Star David up there or whatever, that's cool, too.
Yeah.
I don't think we need less speech and less expression. We need more speech and more expression. Religious and otherwise.
And so you would have no problem then if the city council of Santa Fe was taken over by Satanists and they decided in the next park over from that one they're going to have Black Sabbaths and candles and ritual cutting ups of babies or whatever.
You know,
I'm not a Satanist. I don't know what they're.
I think the baby thing is there's laws against murder. I don't think that would happen if you basically had a.
Well, let's say ritual cuttings up of goats.
Okay. Well, you know, the Jews do that. They have sheep. And
they haven't done that since 87 when the Second Temple was destroyed.
Okay. Well, you know what I'm saying is that's part of the Jewish religion. That's part of the Muslim religion. And I'm sure that's practiced probably somewhere still today. And I don't really have a problem with if you want to, like, you know, voodoo priests do it. You know, they sacrifice chickens.
And you have no problem with your tax dollars being used to support that?
If you had a community that was basically going to allow it to be, openly satanic or run by Satanists, I'd move. I'd go find another place to live. You know, the people in New York want to live the way they want to live. The people in Montana live the way they want to live. The people in San Francisco live the way they want to live. If I like that, I'll move there. If I don't, I won't move there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to say, I understand you, I hear you, and the founders disagreed with you. I mean, they just felt that the government should not be in the business of promoting religion, that there should be a separation between church and state, and we followed that for 227 years. And the whole idea that the United States is based on biblical law or on the Ten Commandments, frankly, is nonsense.
It's based partially on biblical law.
No, it's not. Do not kill and do not steal are simply, those go back 100,000 years in human history. You find those among the animal kingdom.
We also, honor thy father and thy mother is also in that, because basically, until you're 18, that's basically what you have to do, and if you're not going to do that, you're going to be aware of the state.
Yeah, but
also, don't covet, don't steal your neighbor's stuff. Adultery, that's the grounds for divorce, that's the grounds for you can build your case on adultery for as far as divorce goes, and it can be in your favor. So there's more than these two.
Yeah, adultery is not a crime in most places. It's
not a crime, but basically you can if you were a person, let's say your spouse cheats on you, and you want to get divorced, that might be in your favor as far as the legal proceedings go, like who gets what and who gets custody and so on.
Okay, well,
basically it's something that's codified in our law. And
yeah.
I'm not saying it's complete. I'm saying is we need more free speech, not less.
I agree in every regard except when it's paid for with my tax dollars.
Well, I guess the ACLU should probably sue that. Today at the state funeral, we had somebody up there who's probably on the public roll talking about God in the National Cathedral, which is paid for by our tax dollars. How dare we have a National Cathedral, which is inherently a religious thing?
You know, I have no problem with that because it's not promoting a particular religion.
But it is promoting religion in any form whatsoever. And
yeah, but see, the AC, I don't think the ACLU has ever said that we can't promote, well... Okay. Yeah. We're not going to get to a resolution on this. I appreciate your call, number 12, and I got to move along here. Chuck in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
You know, I have a question for you about media. I listen to a fair number of...
Chuck, I'm sorry, I wasn't watching the clock. We got a break here. Can you hold on over the break?
Sure can.
Okay, well, it's going to be about 4 minutes. We'll put you on hold here. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to The Progressing. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
The eastern United States is the scene of one of the largest insect events in the world. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cicadas are big brown bugs that spend most of their life underground. Some species emerge every year to reproduce. Others arrive in cycles that run several years. The largest group of all, known as Brood 10, comes up from underground only once every 17 years. When they arrive, everyone knows about it, and this is their year. Mike Raup is an entomologist at the University of Maryland who studies the Brood 10 insects. He says these cicadas are about an inch and a half long, and they're known for their huge populations.
We hear estimates anywhere from 100,000 to 1.5 million per acre. So these are enormous densities, and these are very large insects for those kinds of densities.
The range of the Brood 10 cicadas extends south from New Jersey to Georgia and as far west as Illinois. Raup says the 17 years they spend underground makes a lot of sense. No predator will live long enough to remember these insects and plan for their return, and Raup says coming out in huge numbers has its own benefits.
It becomes a safety in numbers game. By emerging in huge, huge numbers in any given location, the cicadas simply are far too abundant for any predator to consume them all.
Raup says predators do eat them, and the list of predators includes skunks and squirrels, fish, turtles, snakes, and birds. But the big brown bugs will still manage to produce billions of offspring. They'll be the generation of Brood 10 cicadas that will arrive 17 years from now. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Thank you.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
Ray Charles left us yesterday. And Ronald Reagan is officially leaving us today. And welcome back, Tom Hartman, with you 4 minutes before the hour. Just to update Chuck before I take your call here, to let number 12 know, the folks in our chat room have let me know, and I did a little search and confirmed it. The National Cathedral is actually an Episcopal church, and on their homepage they say they do not receive and never have received any government funding whatsoever. The Catholics had a church in Washington, D.C. They wanted to call it the National Cathedral. It had already been taken by the Episcopalians, so they called their church, the Catholics named their church the National Shrine. But it also gets no money at all from the federal government. So, at the most, the government rented it for the state funeral of Ronald Reagan, or perhaps the Episcopalians donated it. Now, Chuck, you were saying...
Boy, I'll tell you, Ray Charles, step back to follow up.
Yeah.
Actually, I had a question for you. I've been listening to a fair amount of talk radio in the last 6 months. And, there's your program, and I would say, in a kind of similar vein, perhaps Amy Goodman.
Yeah, she's
brilliant.
And then
on the other hand, you've obviously got the extreme right-wingers, who I will not name. But there's this weird thing in the middle that I have been unable to parse. And it's like some days these talk show hosts seem to be pro-Bush. Other days they seem to be libertarian. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are, not without naming names, on the spectrum of political talk radio.
Well, I think you have to keep in mind that, from a business point of view, talk radio is, the job of it is to get an audience and deliver advertisers to an audience. I mean, so you've got people trying to figure out how to do that. Who may not have strong political views, and so they put their finger to the wind and go whichever way. Then you've got folks like, for example, Neil Bortz, who I used to know in Atlanta, who considers himself a libertarian, which I think is a cult. They're super conservatives in some regard and super liberals in others, and so you get these seeming contradictions. I don't know, Chuck. I don't know the answer. But we're at the end of the show, so I got a boogie. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
TomHartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The end of the hour, I should say.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Union organizing could become a lot harder in the near future. This week, the NLRB moved to review the legality of card check agreements, threatening the ability of unions to avoid the lengthy election certification process. Under a card check agreement, an employer automatically accepts a union if a majority of workers indicate their intent to form one. It's a popular form of organizing. Of a 500,000 people who have joined unions in the last few years, the majority joined as part of card check agreements. The NLRB is also reviewing whether or not to allow workers to push for a union decertification vote immediately rather than after the current one-year waiting period.
State-sponsored slave labor remains a big problem in Burma, according to an update from the United Nations' International Labor Organization. The military remains the primary culprit, notorious for literally working people to death on national infrastructure projects like roads and pipelines. The ILO says nowadays Burmese are more often forced to act as human mules and minesweepers for the army.
Should civilians be hired by the government to perform outsourced military operations? That question was raised again this week when the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of 9 Iraqis alleging that 2 U.S. companies, Khaki International and Titan, conspired with the U.S. government to torture prisoners. The companies received U.S. contracts to perform so-called interrogation services. The prisoners who were tortured are seeking monetary compensation and demanding the firms be denied future government contracts.
Workers at a DuPont chemical plant in Niagara Falls, New York, will finally be told about hazards on the job after an administrative law judge Tuesday ruled the company violated federal labor law when it withheld requests for plant information by the Paper Allied Industrial Chemical and Energy Workers Union, or PACE. Not only did DuPont keep secret information on just what chemicals are at the Niagara Falls facility and where they're stored, but it disciplined the former president of the PACE local after he went to the media with concerns about the company. As part of the judge's findings, back pay plus interest will be paid to any employee who was harassed over the union safety investigation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. There seems to be no end in sight for global military spending, according to a recent study by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Total spending topped $956 billion, an increase of 11%. The U.S. share is by far the largest, accounting for 47% of the total. Japan followed with 5%, and England, France, and China each with 4%. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Suppose an amendment was proposed to give corporations a constitutional right to buy our government with their big money donations to politicians. Wouldn't you fight such an arrogant power grab? Well, gird yourself, for an amendment that does exactly that has been proposed, not in Washington, but in Arizona. This is one of 6 states where voters have approved clean election laws that provide public funds for candidates who agree to accept no special interest money. Not only is this public alternative popular with candidates of all political parties, since they no longer have to spend endless hours kissing corporate butts to be able to run for office, but it also works. In Arizona, for example, 9 of the 11 statewide officials, including the governor, and a third of the legislature, have been elected without taking a dime from the corporate powers, thus owing nothing to them. This has, of course, infuriated the old power clique, which is used to buying these officials and running things. So assorted corporate interests have put up hundreds of thousands of dollars to put a constitutional amendment on the Arizona ballot this fall that bans the use of public funds for clean elections, forcing the state back to the bad old days of corporate-funded and corporate-controlled politicians. The people of Arizona, however, are fighting back with a Keep It Clean campaign to defeat this big-money power grab, and they need our help. To battle the $10,000 and $20,000 checks that all of the corporate fat cats are putting up, they need us alley cats from all over America to chip in $5 each to keep Arizona clean.
We need our saying. Abe Lincoln, who said we should have a government of, by, and for the people, is pictured on a $5 bill. To support that ideal, send your own Abe to Arizona. To donate $5, call 202-293-0222.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Fascinating discussions in our chat room here. Time to tell our secrets. Maybe you shouldn't go there. Tom Hartman, www.tomhartman.com. Click on chat room. It'll get you into the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Just want to remind you, our BuzzFlash.com book of the month is Inventing a Nation, Washington, Adams, and Jefferson by Gore Vidal. Excellent. Excellent. And, of course, you've seen this thing now where the cons are trying to name everything after Ronald Reagan. Now they want to put Reagan on the $10 bill. Grover Norquist is on TV the other day going, Hamilton's on there, and he's the only guy who's never a president who's on a bill, and so we ought to replace him with a president, and what better president than Ronald Reagan? What I think the real issue is here is that John Kerry's already on the $20 bill. Just take a look. Cover up the hair with your thumb, your two thumbs, so the top and side hair, so it doesn't look like an old-fashioned haircut. And that's not Andrew Jackson. If you've got one of the old $20 bills, that was Andrew Jackson. This is John Kerry. And so they figure, hey, if John Kerry's on the 20, let's put Reagan on the 10. I suppose makes a certain amount of sense. Interesting news in Peru. A new product coming out of Peru. This is from today's Wall Street Journal. It was yesterday's. I read it on the plane yesterday, in fact, on the way back from New York here. Amid clanging machinery and the whiffs, this is by Juan Ferreno. Might have been the New York Times that I got it out of, actually. I don't know. It's clipped out. I got a fragment here. Anyhow, amid clanging machinery and the whiffs of steam on the factory floor, a new company is producing a soft drink that its creators pledge will transform this Andean country if successful. Keep in mind, this is Peru. I've been to Peru. I was down there back in the early 80s when I first started working with this international relief organization, the Salem International Foundation, or Salem International. And we were down to meet with folks about creating a community for homeless kids, basically, was the bottom line. Turned into a school. But in any case, funny story. Here's a really weird story. I mean, this is one of those things that make you just, wonder about reality. I was staying at a hotel called the Savoy Hotel, of all things, which is about two blocks from the Presidential Palace. And two interesting things happened. The first night I was there, a bomb went off in the Presidential Palace. This was in the middle of without success, but it made a loud noise and woke me up. And the other was this was either the first or second night I was there. It was about, 11, 12 o'clock at night. I couldn't sleep. Hotel. There was a bar, And so I thought, I'll go down and I'll have a couple of beers and it'll help me sleep. Now, at the time, I was running a community for abused kids in New Hampshire. I was the executive director of the New England Salem Children's. We got regular donations to Health Center, and who now runs the Hippocrates Health Center down in Boston, or down in Florida, whose name was Brian. And Brian and I had talked on the phone many times, and he had sent a lot of food up to us and, you know, like this, but we'd never met. So anyhow, here I am in Peru, in Lima, Peru, all alone. I go down to this bar. I'm sitting in the bar. There's probably 20 people in there. You know, it's a bar that could probably hold 200. I mean, it was late at night. It was a weekday. It was no big deal, and it was a tourist hotel, and it was three-quarters empty because there was bombings going on in the city. And I went up to the bar, and I ordered a beer. And I heard at a table nearby a man and a woman who looked American and or North American, you know, European ancestry type, and were speaking in American accented English. And so, you know, I went over and I said, "Hey, you guys from the United States?" And they said, "Sure, you want to join us?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" And I sat down with my beer, and they already had a couple of drinks. And one of them, the guy, he said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Well, I live in New Hampshire." At the time, we lived in New Hampshire. That's where the Children's Village is located. Still is located there. It's on 136 acres up on Stinson Lake and near Romney, New Hampshire. And I said, "I lived in New Hampshire." And he goes, "Oh, that's interesting. I know a guy from New Hampshire." And I said, "Oh, really? What's his name?" And this guy says, "Tom Hartman." and I just, you know, it took me a minute. You know, it's like the bug-eyed look. And I said, "I'm Tom Hartman." And he said, "No, that's impossible." And I said, "No, I really am." And he said, "You know, come on, you know, this is a joke is a joke. You know, my name's Brian. This is Sue," or whatever her name was. They had just gotten married. They were on their honeymoon, actually. And he says, "What's your real name?" And I said, "Yeah, that's my real name." And I pulled out my passport and I handed it to him. And it was his turn to get that look on his face. And he said, "My God, you're the guy I talk to on the phone all the time." I said, "Yeah." So anyway, that's my Peru story. It makes you wonder about, you know, those conspiracy theorists who believe that there are really only 300 people in the world and everybody else is a hologram, and eventually you meet all 300 of them, you know. Anyhow, back to this story that I cut out of yesterday's paper. Amid clanging machinery and the whiffs of steam of the factory floor, a new company is producing a soft drink that its creators pledge will transform the Zandian country if successful. It's filled with vitamins, calcium, and proteins that attract health-conscious consumers. But its most important ingredient is coca, as in real coca, like coca leaves, you know? Actually, on one of those trips to Peru, I was invited to participate in a ceremony with a bunch of indigenous people, and they gave me some coca. You know, everybody had to chew some coca leaf. And I guess I can confess this since I live in the United States, and I'm not promoting drug abuse. And so I chewed a little coca leaf along with this little bit of lime that you have to chew at the same time to dissolve the alkaloid. And it was, for me, the experience was very much like drinking about 2 cups of coffee. In fact, I would say not even 2 cups. I'm real sensitive to caffeine. I, you know, a half a cup of coffee is my minimum for an entire day. I'll have a half a cup in the morning. That's it. And so this was, you know, a little, you know, it was like coffee for me. And they've been chewing this stuff for thousands of years. And it wasn't until, you know, we got the Western civilization, you know, whatever, got the funny idea of taking these leaves and using all kinds of weird chemicals and extracting, you know, cocaine out of them, that it became dangerous. So anyhow, this company, and of course Coca-Cola, the original formula of Coca-Cola that was invented in the 1880s, as I recall, by, what was his name? Pembroke was the pharmacist in Atlanta, as I recall, who invented this as a tonic. And it was cocaine and flavorings. The main flavoring was raisins there's another thing that's tamarind. Raisins and tamarind and orange peel and lime peel and sugar and cocaine. And that was the main original, as I've heard the story told. I lived in Atlanta for a number of years. Dr. Pembroke, or pharmacist Pembroke's formula, and he then sold it for a few hundred or a few thousand dollars, and it became Coca-Cola. And it was sold originally as something for, you know, like PMS or fatigue or, you know, whatever. You know, if you're not feeling well, if you're a little down, drink this stuff. And somebody, some businessman came along and said, hey, this is good stuff. Let's add carbonated water to it and dilute it and turn it into a beverage. And thus was born an empire. Well, then along came 19 whatever it was. I think it was 1918. I could be wrong. It might have been 1912 when cocaine was outlawed in the United States. And so Coca-Cola, although Coca-Cola still has, one of them is cocaine, and another one is, but it's a secret which one it is, by the way. It's an official secret. But there's only one country in the world that can legally do that, and it's in Peru, actually. There's this Peruvian state company, the National Coca Company, and they have a company. It's called Enoch, E-N-O-A-C-H, and they produce the extract from Coca-Cola that is sold to all kinds of companies, including, I understand, the Coca-Cola company. But in any case, these guys have come up with a beverage that actually has cocaine in it. You know, not big extracts or anything, just as you know, crushed up leaves, you know, the extract of the leaf. The Peruvian maker, Coca Royal Food and Drink, has started out in February, and they were filling, in that month, they filled 200,000 10-ounce bottles, and they're now negotiating with health authorities in Europe to secure import permits. Anselm P. Rabai, the Spanish investor who spearheaded the product, said, and I quote, this is perhaps an understatement, "You don't get this from Gatorade. It does not give you," but then he felt he had to qualify that. He says, "It does not give you a high like crack cocaine, but it does give you energy you can use." And, of course, you know, the chewing coca leaves began with the natives who lived up at, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8,000 feet. And you know, I guess it's hard to breathe up there or something. Anyhow, in that Andean country, that pitch that K-Drink is natural and good for consumers has the beverage flying off the shelf of some of Peru's biggest supermarket chains. Since this thing started in February, and it is now the hottest drink in Peru. And they're talking about selling it all over the world. K-Drink is selling about 50,000 bottles a month. It is seen as a tantalizing solution for... Now, I thought this was, you know, also fascinating. Think of the millions of dollars that we are spending, you know, flying over in Peru and Colombia as well, dumping Agent Orange on coca crops. And the problem, of course, and the reason why these small farmers hate us so much in that region, and they really do, I mean, this is one of the things that many people say led to the Shining Path or led to a lot of these insurrections, is that it's hard to be discriminating. Most of these farmers are subsistence farmers, and they've got a veg patch, and you dump Agent Orange on it, and everything dies. The trees die, the vegetables die, the coca dies, and people are starving. And so anyhow, they say that this offers a tantalizing solution for poverty-stricken coca farmers who are periodically forced to eradicate their illicit crops in Washington-backed anti-drug efforts. And coca is already used inside Peru and Bolivia, South America's only traditional growers, to make soap, toothpaste, chewing gum, and candy. And now it's becoming a soft drink. They're negotiating with Italy, the Netherlands, and Spain, and expect to be in those countries fairly soon. They do caution that a drinker would likely fail a standard drug test, even though there isn't enough coke to get high. Isn't it interesting how things go in cycles? You know, Coca-Cola started out this way, and here they are back again. This is not the left-wing news of the day, I suppose, but I thought it was fascinating. 20 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission.
Their only motivation, making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever... Ancient Cultures and the Directed Hope, Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policy.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 25 minutes after the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Got an email here from Tom in Masontown, West Virginia, saying that he thinks he has won our contest. Our contest, of course, being please name one piece of legislation proposed by the Republican Party or President Bush, and then, of course, passed through Congress and signed by President Bush, whose primary purpose was to promote democracy or help we the people, as opposed to primarily helping corporations. And he took a good shot at it, I got to say. He took a real good shot at it. I'm impressed. He says, hi, my name is Tom. He says, I'm sending this from work, which I probably shouldn't do.
But if you have any use for it, anyhow, he says, I think I have found one piece of legislation that Bush has signed that, in fact, may have been put in corporations. At least on its face, that is the case. And I don't see right off how it could be otherwise. On December 16th, 2006, I'm assuming that's a typo and he means 2003, Bush signed into law the legislation sometimes referred to as the anti-spam bill. This is one that supposedly had the effect of reducing the annoying email we get so much of. Of course, it hasn't had any effect, but at least the clown signed it. As is so often the case, I may be wrong or I may be right, 50-50 chance, as long as I'm here. Thank you ever so much for your good work and the good word it gets out for those of us who are starved for good sense. Sincerely, Tom, in Masontown, West Virginia. Well, Tom, I'm sorry it doesn't win. It's, first of all, this is a piece of legislation that was not proposed by the Republicans. It was proposed by the Democrats. And, in fact, it passed when the Democrats controlled in 2002, when the Democrats controlled the... I had the note here on it, and I've lost it. Anyhow, when the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, it actually passed the Senate, and it failed in the House of Representatives. So, you know, it's number one. And then there was all this outrage about it, you know, gee, we really want this and got to do something. And, you know, by then the cat was out of the bag. They really had no choice but to pass the thing. So, number one, it was aggressively, initially, anyhow, opposed by the Republicans. And when they finally got done with it, they built a couple of interesting provisions into it. To make sure that the corporations would benefit at least as much as you and me, and in my opinion, far more, since they have money at stake. There are two caveats to the anti-spam legislation. The first says that you can... hang on just a second here. Now, it just occurred to me, I am mixing up in my brain the anti-spam bill... And the do not call bill. So I'm going to have to go back and look at the anti-spam bill. I didn't know that there was an anti-spam bill signed into law, and I'm going to have to go back and look at that. I'm sorry. I was all set to go off on. Well, let me tell you about the two problems with the do not call bill, because that's what I thought he was talking about. So much for assuming, right? You know the old the old saying about that. The two exceptions of the anti-do not call bill was that if you are a nonprofit, you are exempt. And so, of course, corporations are aggressively setting up nonprofit research institutes and whatnot to call people. And number two, if you're a politician, you're exempt. And number three, millions of people, of course, registered for this, put their names on the list. And now they are marketing that list to politicians and nonprofits, which, of course, will end up back with corporations. So I would say the do not call bill has been, you know, unfortunately co-opted, certainly. Well, let me check out this anti-spam thing. I am not knowledgeable about that, and I'll have to look into it. So, Tom... give me a day, and I'll let you know on Monday. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. We'll be right back.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Union organizing could become a lot harder in the near future. This week, the NLRB moved to review the legality of card check agreements, threatening the ability of unions to avoid the lengthy election certification process. Under a card check agreement, an employer automatically accepts a union if a majority of workers indicate their intent to form one. It's a popular form of organizing. Of a 500,000 people who have joined unions in the last few years, the majority joined as part of card check agreements. The NLRB is also reviewing whether or not to allow workers to push for a union decertification vote immediately rather than after the current one-year waiting period.
State-sponsored slave labor remains a big problem in Burma, according to an update from the United Nations' International Labor Organization. The military remains the primary culprit, notorious for literally working people to death on national infrastructure projects like roads and pipelines. The ILO says nowadays Burmese are more often forced to act as human mules and minesweepers for the army.
Should civilians be hired by the government to perform outsourced military operations? That question was raised again this week when the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit on behalf of 9 Iraqis alleging that 2 U.S. companies, Khaki International and Titan, conspired with the U.S. government to torture prisoners. The companies received U.S. contracts to perform so-called interrogation services. The prisoners who were tortured are seeking monetary compensation and demanding the firms be denied future government contracts.
Workers at a DuPont chemical plant in Niagara Falls, New York, will finally be told about hazards on the job after an administrative law judge Tuesday ruled the company violated federal labor law when it withheld requests for plant information by the Paper Allied Industrial, Chemical, and Energy Workers Union, or PACE. Not only did DuPont keep secret information on just what chemicals are at the Niagara Falls facility and where they're stored, but it disciplined the former president of the PACE local after he went to the media with concerns about the company. As part of the judge's findings, back pay plus interest will be paid to any employee who was harassed over the union safety investigation.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. There seems to be no end in sight for global military spending, according to a recent study by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Total spending topped $956 billion, an increase of 11%. The U.S. share is by far the largest, accounting for 47% of the total. Japan followed with 5%, and England, France, and China each with 4%.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Just discussing in the chat room here with folks the anti-spam law. Boy, there's a lawyer in our chat room. I mean, we've got some well-educated folks in there. Yes, there is such a law. Senate hears mixed reviews of it. Anyhow, the catch is you have to opt out. I'm going to check this out a little bit more. Maybe, who knows, maybe Tom won our contest. We will know on Monday. I have to admit, I went off on a tangent, or went off half-cocked, or whatever the phrase is, thinking he was referring to a different law, and I was going to go, ha, 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 I know that one's not it. And I could be wrong. I often am. Don't tell anybody, but, you know. 26 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our number if you'd like to call. The Detroit Free Press reports, in what could be a blow to the United Auto Workers and other unions, the Republican Majority National Labor Relations Board said it would decide on whether to curtail a union's ability to organize workers. Now, there's a whole technical thing here called card check agreements, and I'm not going to go through the whole explanation of it. But the bottom line is that the National Labor Relations Board, which was put together back as a result of the Wagner Act back in the 1930s, is there to, you know, make sure that conflicts between labor and management are worked out, and frankly, by and large, originally was there to represent the interests of labor. Of course, since Reagan, it's been there to harm the interests of labor, represent the interests of corporations. But here's the kicker. This I thought real interesting. This article by John Gallagher, a Detroit Free Press writer. He says the case probably won't be decided until sometime in 2005. Now, see, the Republicans are trying right now to make this thing happen, but the case probably won't be decided until sometime in 2005. And the outcome of this November's presidential election will likely decide the issue. Because the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, sort of like a lot of other governmental committees and commissions, well, like the FCC, for example, has an odd number of members. And whichever party is in office or picks them gets to, you know, for example, you've got two Democrats and three Republicans right now in the FCC. Well, the National Labor Relations Board, I'm not sure how many members there are on it right now. Oh, it's a 3-2 majority. There's five. So the current 3-2 majority would swing back to a more union-friendly Democratic control if U.S. Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts wins the presidency. And, of course, if George Bush were to actually win the presidency for the first time, then you would have a situation where probably you're going to see fewer and fewer unions, less successful unionizing efforts, and a continued and rapid deterioration of America's middle class. All sides agree, the Free Press notes, that the case represents a turning point. This could be a very significant thing. It's worth keeping your eye on. It's called card check agreements is the whole thing about that, and it's a way that unions have been able to. It's a technique that unions use to unionize, basically to ask members of a corporation if they want to have a union shop there or not, and it's being of course challenged by the Republicans. So anyhow, that's that. We've got a O'Reilly alert here for you. Host Bill O'Reilly. Here's the headline. This is from Media Matters for America. Fox's O'Reilly fabricated evidence of success in purported boycott of French imports. Yes, indeed. Host Bill O'Reilly threatened Canada with a boycott like the one he threatened against France, then cited a phony statistic about the success of the French boycott. The threat came during O'Reilly's debate with Toronto Globe and Mail columnist Heather Malik about Canada's harboring two deserters from the U.S. military who have fled to Canada. Here's the transcript from the O'Reilly Factor. O'Reilly, quote, "Now if the Canadian government, if your government harbors these two deserters, doesn't send them back, there will be a boycott of your country, which will hurt your country enormously. France is feeling that sting." And Malik says, "I don't think for a moment such a boycott would take place because we are your biggest trading partners." And O'Reilly says, "Oh, no, it will take place, madam, in France." And she says, "I don't think your French boycott has done too well." He goes, "Oh, they've lost billions of dollars in France, according to the Paris Business Review." And she says, "I think that's nonsense." So Media Matters, MediaMatters.org, by the way, is their website, looked into this. And here's what they had to say. Media Matters for America found no evidence of a publication named the Paris Business Review. A Google.com search reviewed no mentions of Paris Business Review. Apparently O'Reilly just made this up out of thin air. Revue d'Affaires de Paris. It's any similar French name. It's not there in French. It's not there in English. A LexisNexis search for Paris, France, or French within five words of Business Review produced no relevant results. There is a journal called the European Business Review, which is published in England. However, over the past 2 years, the European Business Review has not mentioned, well, not once, an American boycott of France. Further, contrary to O'Reilly's claim that France has lost billions of dollars due to an American boycott, American imports from France have actually increased. Somebody tell Bill. Don't tell him while he's on the air. He might fall off his chair. Well, or he would just, you know, make up another statistic or another phony magazine. Contrary to O'Reilly's claim that France has lost billions of dollars due to an American boycott, American imports from France have actually increased since international tensions with France began in the months prior to the start of the war in Iraq in March 2003. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, not exactly known as an anti-O'Reilly organization. I know he, you know, he's tends to be a little paranoid at times. In February 2004, the United States imported 2.2, like, you know, when he was on with Terry Gross. You're just trying to get me, aren't you, Terry? I'm paraphrasing. It was to that effect. Anyhow, in February 2004... the United States imported 2.26 billion in French goods and services, up from 2.18 billion. Now, if I'm doing my math right, that's about $880 million more in 2004 than we did in 2002. That ain't chicken feed. 2 days later, on the April 29th episode of the O'Reilly Factor, O'Reilly plugged a poll on his personal website. I guess instead of going with the Paris Business Review, he's now going to go with a poll on his website. A new BillO'Reilly.com poll asks you the question, will you boycott Canadian goods and services if that country does not return two American deserters who are being glorified by some of the Canadian media? Don't you love it when a question has embedded in it a statement? I mean, the cons are so good at this. I sometimes I marvel at it. I think probably the master of the art form is Sean Hannity, particularly on his TV show, where he will ask a question, and there are always variations of the "Are you still beating your wife?" question, where, you know, if you say no, then you've implicitly admitted that you used to, and if you say yes, well then you're in big trouble. But, you know, it's a question that implies a truth that doesn't exist. And just remarkable. These guys are so good at this. Just a few statistics wanted to share with you. Thought you might find this interesting. Jobless claims have risen to the highest level since April. Of course, the administration's running around saying all is well. First-time claims for state unemployment benefits rose to 352,000 the weekend of June 5th. Wall Street analysts had forecast a fall in claims, but instead we got a rise, a significant rise. And here's another interesting statistic, this from a group called Americans Coming Together, ACT. Bush environmental policies cited as cause for 300 Cincinnati pollution-related deaths a year. Now, of course, you can extrapolate this to anywhere in the country. This particular study was done by ABT Associates, a U.S. Environmental Protection Agency consultant, hired to check out the consequences of a coal-fired power plant there in Cincinnati. And breathing the air in greater Cincinnati kills about 300 people every year. Tough enforcement laws, they say, would result in 4,000 fewer premature deaths every year, but the study says will reach 22,000 by 2010. In Pennsylvania, 1,825 Pennsylvania residents die of pollution-related deaths every year. But here's the, now you get to the national statistics. This is the kicker. Keep in mind, Clear Skies Initiative allows power plants to continue emitting pollutants that under an executive order that Bill Clinton had passed were required to stop at the end of 2004. Bush's Clear Skies Initiative gives them till 2016, and they only have to clean up a small percentage of it by then. It was supposed to be all done by the end of this year. And they certainly have had enough time since, Clinton made that a law of like 5 years ago. Nationally, power plant pollution caused 38,200 heart attacks and 23,600 premature deaths each year, more than the 20,000 homicide deaths and the 17,000 people killed in drunk driving accidents. Well, that's an interesting comparison. 20,000 people in America died because of homicide. But pollution, air pollution from power plants, caused 38,200 heart attacks and 23,600 premature deaths from other causes, you know, other ways of dying than a heart attack, but all caused by air pollution from power plants. And yet in the United States, 17,000 people die in drunk driving accidents and 20,000 in homicides. Where are our priorities? Well, the industry says, we've got to make profits. We can't clean up the air. We've got to have profits. See, this is the imperative that the cons, you know, love to attach to you. It's called internalize profits, externalize costs. If somebody dies, that's a cost. It's a cost to society, it's a cost to their family, it's something, you know, and if they die of a disease, of course, you know, there's medical costs associated as well. I guess some would argue that that stimulates the economy, but, you know, let's not be quite that cynical. Those are costs. And the conservative agenda, in large part, I mean, the main, of course, as you well know, the main core of the conservative agenda is cheap labor. Is to create a small, very, very wealthy class and a lot of people who are working very, very desperately, very hard, don't have time to pay much attention to politics, you know, go home, pass out in front of the TV. Let's go back to Dickensian England. I mean, conservative economics is nothing new. It's been around for a long, long time. And but the secondary part of it, you know, the primary part is cheap labor. The secondary part is to use government to actually do the opposite of what government was created to do. What government was created to do was we, the people of the United States of America, in order to form a more perfect union, created the government of the United States to ensure our life, liberty, and happiness. Well, apparently the government under these new rules is not going to ensure the lives of 38,200 people who die of heart attacks and 23,600 who die of premature deaths. It doesn't say anything in the Constitution about the government being created to enhance corporate profits. Now, again, I want to be on the record as saying I'm not against corporations. I have started 7 corporations in my life. I've done well by them. I have nothing to complain about. I just don't think that corporations should be setting national policy. Of course we want a national policy that makes it easy to do business in the United States, that encourages people to do business in the United States. And frankly, the conservative agenda, in my opinion, is the opposite of that. When Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, we saw hundreds of thousands of small mom-and-pop businesses and communities across America go out of business because competition got eliminated, because the big got so big that they could simply step on the little, and that was the end of that. I remember in the 70s, if you drove through 20 different towns, you knew that each one was a different town. By the end of the 80s, by the end of the Reagan era, certainly the end of the 90s, you could drive through 20 different towns and have no idea where you were. Because they all looked the same, they all had the same restaurants, they all had the same hotels, they all had the same, everything was the same. Competition was gone. Real competition, meaningful competition. Competition that it has to do with the ability to start a business, the ability to be an entrepreneur. One final thing that I wanted to share with you here, and then I've got a great conservative alert for you, which we may have to do right after the break. But it has to do with stem cell research. Yesterday on TV, you know, of course, Nancy Reagan now is outspokenly opposed to the Bush administration's policy against stem cell research. And I heard one of the commentators from one of the networks make the remark that stem cells come from aborted fetuses. Ain't true. Ain't true. Not at all. Where stem cells come from is all across the United States. There are hundreds and hundreds of fertility clinics. And if you want to get pregnant, you take a whole bunch of eggs out of a woman, and you take a bunch of sperm, you put them together in a dish, a bunch of them get fertilized, you pick one of those fertilized ones out, you implant it into the womb, and that becomes a baby. All the rest of them that were fertilized get thrown away. That's how it works. I mean, we throw away literally tens of thousands of these things every day. Those are the source of stem cells. They don't come from aborted fetuses. They come from in vitro fertilization. And yet that, because once it's fertilized, it's life, that has got the Bushies all upset. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. Its clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of CarboBlocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Shifting to renewable energy could create more than 1 million high-paying jobs. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. 13 separate studies have recently looked at the potential impact of renewable energy development on the U.S. economy. They vary in their methods and focus, but all agree on one thing. Solar, wind, biomass, and other renewable technologies could create a lot of new jobs. Daniel Kamen is an energy expert at the University of California at Berkeley. He recently evaluated those 13 studies.
The low-end estimates are that there would be maybe 500,000 new jobs by doing this. And the high-end estimates are a couple million new jobs.
Kamen's own assessment falls right in the middle. 1.2 million new jobs if we meet 20% of our future energy needs with renewable energy and efficiency programs.
And that's job growth above and beyond what you would get if you simply met that new 20% of energy mix from more fossil fuels. So this really is talking about job growth, not just sort of job substitution or replacement.
And they'd be good jobs, according to Kamen.
These are high-tech manufacturing type jobs. These are what most economists consider to be high-quality jobs, both in terms of wages and in terms of career paths, and also jobs that are really productive for the economy.
Kamen says most of those jobs could not be outsourced to other countries, and he says a boost in biomass fuels would strengthen the American farm economy. But Kamen says this won't happen by itself. He says we need a major revision of national energy policy to provide rewards and incentives for renewable energy and efficiency. And he says we're missing an opportunity to cut our dependence on foreign oil and put a lot of people back to work. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. And it's time for our... By the way, I should say you can also get stem cells apparently from the blood in the umbilical cords. But it's much harder to find and not as effective as the blastocysts from in vitro fertilization. Anyhow, just to keep things straight here, our conservative alert for the day.
Making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Yes, indeed. This from conservativealerts.com. You might remember that a few weeks ago we told you about an upcoming new movie showing the horrors that could hit America and the world should one major disaster come to pass. No, we weren't talking about the election of John Kerry, as horrifying a thought as that may be. We were talking about the day after tomorrow.
That's right. I really am, because I'm not serious.
The movie purports to show the inevitable results of abrupt climate change caused by humanity's technological stupidity, right? It's our fault. We can't stop it. Well, actually, according to the loony leftists at MoveOn.org, there is a way to stop it. They want the Climate Stewardship Act, Senate 139, House Resolution 4067, a comprehensive national policy for cutting greenhouse gas emissions. Well, Conservative Alert says the impact of this act would be far-reaching on the economy. The average household's energy bill would increase by $444 per year by 2025. And real disposable income would drop by almost 1% per person until 2011 from what would have been the case, and would take 15 years to recover to levels it would have reached if this legislation weren't passed into law. Well, what they completely overlook is the fact that if we move to renewable sources of energy, we would create at least 1 million new jobs. It would be a brand... I mean, it would entirely revitalize our economy and get us off this addiction that we have to oil from the Middle East.
You might say, everybody hates my...
But that doesn't seem to matter to the cons. They just want to promote the agenda of the oil industry. Anyhow, our conservative alert for the day. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us this Friday. Shabbat Shalom. Happy Friday to you, TGIF. Thanks to Adam Cohen for engineering our program. Thanks to Louise for producing it. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Shelby at RadioPower.org for getting us out on the web. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics, which does business nationally. Give them a call, 1-800-SMALL-DOG, smalldog.com. Thanks to Mike Toth for our archives. And Ben, thanks to the folks in our chat room, and thanks to you for listening. See you here Monday next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more...